I'm always fascinated by this gospel. I think about the practice of pounding on someone's door and trying to wake them, or at the very least trying to get their attention. Never underestimate that everyone who heard this parable originally was very familiar with the principle of once they had gone to bed and locked the door, everybody slept in the same room. It was the safest room. You could keep track of everybody that way. And so in order to get up in the night, you would have to step over anyone in the way between you and the door. And remember, there are no flashlights, and torches have to be lit. And so any light that you have provides heat. Remember, they live in the desert, so you don't necessarily need a lot of it. And they had a centralized room in the house where they slept, so it retained the heat through the day, so even though it might get cold out, the room was warm. So when he said that my children and I are already in bed, what he meant was, I literally have to wake everyone in the house and disturb everyone who's trying to do something in order to get to the door, to unlock it, to access this. You're not just bothering me, you're bothering everybody. And, you know, it's the irate person who's sleeping. And I'm told, I've been assured, that not everyone is irate when you wake them. But in my experience, everyone is irate when you wake them. Maybe it's just my technique. My mother assures me that it's my technique, but that's just, you know. I think it's her opinion here. I'll submit it to you for this. When I wake people, when I don't do this as much anymore, but when I was a child, I needed to wake someone, I would get as close as I could, and I would say your name softly. So when you woke up, I was about a quarter inch away from your face, whispering your name. Everyone woke up so irate, I have no idea why. It's crazy. But apparently not everyone wakes this way, but it is an irate waking. I find this especially beautiful. I really do. I find this comforting. Because consider for a moment that this might be annoying. It might be a disturbance to be bothered in such a way. But look at Abraham. Abraham stands next to God. And he looks out over the city. And remember, in Abraham's mind, he knows full well, his dear cousin lives right there inside. His cousin Lot lives there, and he's worried about it. They're going down to determine whether or not there's anyone good left in the city. And of course, in Abraham's mind, he knows Lot. And he sees that city and he goes, well, are you going to destroy it? Maybe. He said, what if there are good people down there? What if there's just a little bit of good left in a bad place? God says, tell you what, there's a little bit of good left. I won't destroy the city. But it's not enough for Abraham. He needs to persist. He needs to know how little is little enough. And of course, in true lawyer fashion, he doesn't, actually, I don't even know about lawyers so much. In true children fashion, I can ask any of my nephews to do this for me as well. They just take a little bit, right? Not 50, what about 45? Now we're in an open negotiation. He's like, well, okay, not 45. Now the doors are open. Now I can negotiate for anything. How about 40? 30? 20? 10? It's that little piece. Is it just that little bit left? It's that constant persistence. It's almost needling. Can you imagine someone trying to ask you just a little bit more, just a little bit more? Hey, if you're going to give me, a loaf of bread, can I get a loaf and a half? And if you're willing to give me a loaf and a half, why not two loaves? Because, that's just that little bit more. It's just... And on the principle, it doesn't seem so bad, but it's just that needling, that constant nickeling, just really let it go. But I think there's an encouragement here. I think there's a great reminder here for us. Between Abraham and this great, great passage with Jesus, this great reminder to us that if we really seek something from God, whatever it is, whatever we're seeking from God, whatever it is that thing that we want, we need to be nickeling like that. We might say, well, here it says, ask and you shall receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be open to you. Then I'm all set. Why don't I just ask once and be done with it? What if we need to persist? What if we need to persist consistently and constantly? Never underestimate that St. Augustine is one of the great saints of the church. He's one of the early church fathers. He's 5th century. He lived in the 400s, even before, even a little bit of the 300s. He was the Bishop of Hippo. He wrote some of the greatest theological tracts of our time. He wrote Doctrine of the Trinity that we still teach today because they can't improve upon it because it was so well thought out then that we don't even need to develop it now.
Oh, by the way, he also had 13 illegitimate children, tons of actual questionable relationships with women, and actually hired a woman to follow him around where he went from city to city to sleep with him before he converted. But his mother pursued. His mother prayed. Pray for that conversion. Pray for him to come back to the church. Pray for him constantly. It took over 20 years of St. Monica, his mother, praying and praying and praying and asking and asking and asking before she received. And you might think, well, is God lazy? You know, it took 20 years. What's God doing? You know, is he just sitting on his hands during this time? I don't think so. I think there's something about this great invitation to us that we're supposed to ask, that we're supposed to seek, that we're supposed to ask God for these things. But with every request that we make, every time we ask God for something, every time we're seeking these things out and trying to get close to God and trying to achieve these things, whether it's trying to make sure that we get a job or we can make our payments or we can get closer to God or we can convince our children to come back to God or whatever it is that we're praying for, with every prayer that we offer up, with every intention we make, God forms us. You see, I prayed to God when I was 8 years old and I asked him if he wanted me to be a priest. But I tell you what, at 8 years old, I definitely wasn't ready to be a priest. You know, I had a little growing up to do, you know, like 20 years or so. There was work to be done. But I had to start the prayer at 8 in order to be ready to enter seminary at 18. In order to be ready to say yes to God and be a priest at 26. With every prayer that we make, with every intention that we offer here, when we keep trying and we persist and we pursue after God, all that time God is pursuing after us. All that time he is forming what we're trying to get to, and he's trying to help us get to that goal by stretching us so that we're ready to receive it. So that whatever it is that thing we're praying for, as we persist after it, as we try after it, as we're struggling on after it, this isn't a one-time deal. I mean, sometimes we panic and we pray to God and we do well on the test as we're staring at it, and so of course there's only one chance to pass that test. But God isn't going to test us just this one thing. With every prayer we make, with every constant intention we make, God forms us and makes us ready to receive that gift that he's about to give us. Makes us ready to have that job he's preparing for us, or that work he has for us, or that special intention that we're going to offer. We have to be remade to be ready to receive it. And so it is that with this constant asking, with this constant pursuing, with this constant prayer back to God, we're being made ready for what he's going to give us. So if you feel discouraged in prayer, if you think he's not listening, it's not that he said no, or maybe he did. Sometimes he says no. But it's not that he's written you off. He's never ignoring us. There's not a single prayer that goes unheard. But sometimes he's still prepping us so that we're ready for what it is that we're about to receive. One final thought. I hear a lot about Sodom these days. I don't know why I hear a lot about Sodom these days, but I do. Maybe I'm just on the wrong parts of the internet, but I hear a lot about Sodom these days. We're going to experience the wrath of Sodom. I have a very clear thing I want to share with you. God promised if there were 10 good people, he would not destroy that place. Now, we don't live in Sodom. We live in Dixon, Illinois. But if 10 of us hold out close to God, we can save the rest of the city. Now, that may sound crazy, but I'm telling you right now, the salvation of others is something we want to pray for. We don't pray for their condemnation. We see somebody screwing up. We can't just say, well, God's going to punish them. That's up to God. If we stay close to him, we stay faithful to him, as hard and as much struggle as we may experience in the various places of the world, if we just have a few good faithful left for God, he preserves it for us. So keep praying. Keep asking. Keep seeking. And when you're ready, God will give it to you.